Shalom leYehudim, shalom lebnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Yud Ches Be'Elul, Parashas Kisavo, Tashinayim Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 20 September 2016, webcasting from Earth Central. Judging by the de facto government of the world, the UN, this is the center of the world. Interesting, too, how what happens here can set the stage for events all over the world. Take, for example, the coincidence of attempts by homicidal Muslim maniacs in Israel and Manhattan and New Jersey all at the same time. It's like what's happened in Europe, you know, Charlie Hebdo, Brussels, Paris, Nice. For years, we here in the land of Israel have suffered such strikes by homicidal Arab and Muslim maniacs, and now it seems like a plague of their behavior is spreading to other countries. The Western world has tolerated the satanic strikes by these Muslim demons against us, and are now suffering similar satanic strikes. By tolerated, even supported, I'm thinking of the support the Goyim have given the Jew killers of this generation, called the Palestinians, a.k.a. the victims of Zionism. It all began with the invention of the Palestinian narrative, a concept that came from the anti-Jew mind of Edward Said. His position was that the birth of Zionism may have pleased the Jews and many people, after the Holocaust, the phoenix rising from the ashes, but from the point of view of the Palestinian nation, it was a catastrophe in which innocent people were the victims of this exclusivist ideology called Zionism. As the Jews suffered during the Holocaust at the hands of the German Nazis, in 1948 the Palestinians suffered at the hands of the Jews acting like Nazis with their racist ideology. The Jews have their Shoah, and the ancient Palestinians have their Nakba. That's why they support the Goyim, these poor victims of our national revival. Today at the United Nations, the Muslim saboteur in the White House addressed the General Assembly and rebuked Israel for, quote, building on Palestinian land, which is a direct rejection and contradiction of the League of Nations mandate of 1922, whose language suggests that what they were doing was creating a jurisdiction called Palestine that had not existed before the Great War, certainly not under the Ottoman Empire for 400 years before that war. The League mandated the creation of a Palestine that had not existed in 14 centuries of Islam, which the League explicitly stated was the historic homeland of the Jewish people. The connection between Palestine and the mandate to create one and the Jewish people feeling at home in their historic homeland. And here was Barack Hussein Obama today proclaiming his recognition that this was Palestinian land. Has any United States government ever recognized this real estate as Palestinian? I don't think so. I think Congress must ratify a decision of a treaty to recognize a new state. In other words, I don't think this enemy of the American people, Obama, has the right to say such a thing. But then again, he's given the American people the middle finger time and again. It was reported today that 88 senators sent a letter to this saboteur reminding him of the veto power of the United States in the Security Council that the U.S. has used to defend Israel. I think maybe 24 times. Foolishly, this letter, though, also supported the two-state solution, when a proper policy would reflect America's respect for Israel as a democratic state that has the right to decide what's best for it. U.S. policy should never be to think that the U.S. knows better than us Jews here in Israel what's best for us. Obama, one fears, thinks that as he rammed Obamacare down the throats of the American people against all opinion polls, he likely thinks he knows what's best for Israel and will try to ram his policy up our wazoo, too. I think he's capable of anything. I watched today, literally, the opening, I think, two sentences of Obama's live address at the United Nations on TV and shut it off. I couldn't take it. The first two sentences, if memory serves, tomorrow we'll have the exact transcript, he said that this was the last time that he would address them, and he would like to look back at the 8 years of what accomplishments since his first address. Again, as in every one of his speeches, he is the prime subject of discussion. Every speech is also for him a campaign speech touting himself. He was going to review his 8 years as the most powerful leader in the world in international affairs. And that is when I shut him off. I'll read about it tomorrow. And then only later, I saw in a news brief that he had gone on to rebuke Israel for building on Palestinian land. In fairness to him, though, the State of Israel has paved the way for talking like this, by admitting Israel did, this is Palestinian land. If Prime Minister Netanyahu was sincere and honest at Bar-Ilan in 2009 in supporting the idea of a Palestinian state, in that speech, Bibi confessed that, yes, Judea and Samaria are Palestinian land. The only thing to be negotiated was a new arrangement in which the Palestinians would become the sovereign lords. The Israeli army and the police presumably would retreat, but in such a way that Israel's security would not be jeopardized. That's Bibi's fantasy at Bar-Ilan. The Palestinians have a right to an independent state, he suggested, versus Israel, that has only some security concerns. Talk like that, and what you get is Obama at the UN today talking about Palestinian land. Obama declared his position that this land where I live belongs to the Palestinians, and I have no right to live where I do, obviously, me and 430,000 other Jews. Every one of us is a claim jumper. Used to lynch claim jumpers in the old Wild West. This attitude also accounts for other incidents in which anti-Jew hostility is just below the surface. Take, for example, the coincidence today mentioned earlier of here in Israel, three border police officers in Jerusalem and Hebron were wounded. And in the attacks, two savage Arabs had to be shot dead. A third, I think, was seriously wounded and hospitalized. That was a big mistake. One of the police officers stabbed in Jerusalem is a 33-year-old mother of two kids who was sneak attacked from behind and stabbed in the neck. Her condition is terrible. The subsurface anti-Semitism was on display in the statement put out afterwards, after yesterday's attacks. Now they number 8 over the last 4 days. A statement issued by the United Nations Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process, Nikolai Mladenov, quote, "I reiterate the United Nations position that there can be no justification for terrorism and violence. I call upon authorities on both sides to take measures to preserve calm and avoid escalation, especially during the upcoming period of the Jewish high holidays," close quote. Why does he call on both sides to take measures? What measures? What this bureaucrat should have said was not to call on both sides, but to call on one side only, saying, "Attention, all ancient Palestinians, stop murdering Jews." That's all he had to say. For decades now, when a politician discusses the situation here and uses the expression, "both sides," you are listening to this generation's version of anti-Semitism, this phantasmagorical moral equivalence between the two sides. What the anti-Jews have accomplished since the 1960s is the complete revision of the relationship here between the tiny Jewish people, making the desert of their ancient homeland bloom again, heroically fending off the Arabs. That's why in the 1950s and 60s it was called the Arab-Israeli conflict, since, however, tragically with the cooperation of even such staunch Zionists as Binyamin Ben-Ben-Sion, the Palestinian nation was invented and born with a birthright to its ancient homeland of Palestine that the Jews stole from them and will not return. It is anti-Semitic of this UN flunky to put out such a statement like this in response to the horror that day of these knife attacks, this knife-wielding, barbaric, would-be Jew killer who pounced from behind on this woman, this young mother in a police uniform, and struck her several times in the neck and the upper body, and once the male partner plunged his knife into him, he was able to recover, though, and aim his gun and eliminate to kill the Muslim assassin, who, like medieval assassins, that was a sect in the Middle Ages, was on a suicide mission for Islam, though civilization is still not up to recognizing this reality. Donald Trump is certainly on the right in wanting to destroy such terrorists, such people, but he needs to drop his use of the radical Islamic terrorism that he wants to fight and just say Islamic terrorism. It's a misreading of Islam to perceive these terrorists as radicals or fringe figures. They are not. They are representatives of an Islam that has been belligerent since invented by that monster Muhammad. Yeah, I think Donald Trump has his heart in the right place, but has yet to face the enormity of the task at hand. If he thinks that extreme vetting of immigrants is going to help, whatever that is, and even ask for statements of no evil intent, he misreads the population in question. These Muslims will say anything, regardless of the truth. They would tell whatever consular officer who interviews them what he wants to hear. It's silly to ask for some kind of pledge of peaceful intentions and respect for America. Last thing I heard today, Obama in his speech was going to speak the number of 100,000 more Syrian refugees coming into America under the cover course of humanitarian kindness. When it fits so nicely in his plan to fundamentally change America by making it into a Muslim country. In his Cairo speech, he crowed that Muslims have been part of America since the very beginning. And so his audience at Al-Azhar could feel that they have a right to see in America something that rightfully belongs to them. It cannot be just me that sees in this great humanitarian gesture on Obama's part an opportunistic ruse to bring in more holy warriors, disguised as refugees, poor, poor homeless victims of violence in their home countries, now begging for asylum. There is only one logical way to vanquish the terror now spreading in the West, and that is to declare Islam incompatible with Western civilization and take in no more Muslims. All immigration by Muslims must be shut down. Not only do they produce this endless stream of suicidal, homicidal maniacs, far more important is their polygamy, which has short-term and long-term negative consequences. It is connected to a culture in which women are objects, oppressed and abused, and even mutilated, and in the long run, they produce a backward society. For sure, the Arab states and Pakistan and Afghanistan and Libya and Yemen have nothing to teach the West, and what they do should stay in their countries and not enter the West. What the U.S. and the free world, what's left of it, need is a leader who will insist that Islam is not one of the three Abrahamic religions. Abraham was the kindest of men, and the Muslims, the Arabs, are among the cruelest of men. There's nothing Abrahamic about them, and really the text itself tells us that Ishmael was not Abrahamic, a judgment made by Avraham himself when he expelled his firstborn son from his community. And Israel has to confront the reality that Islam is a form of anti-Semitism, arguably more entrenched than Christian anti-Jew belief and practice. The very name Islam is anti-Semitic. It refers to the submission of Avraham to the will of Allah, and of course, this is naked intellectual property theft. This is the Jews' story that has been stolen and perverted. The Jews say Avraham bound his son Yitzchak for a sacrifice in Jerusalem, and the Muslims plagiarize this tale and claim the son in question was Ishmael, and the location in Mecca. Islam, the very name, reverberates with the original sin of these desert brigands. Donald Trump and the West have to drop the nonsense that there is such a thing as radical Islam, or also known as Islamism, and Islamists who are devoted to Islamism, which is different from normative Islam. This is all demonstrably false. If indeed all these homicidal maniacs here in Israel and on 23rd Street, Manhattan, and Nice, and Brussels, and Paris were outliers out there on the shunned and rejected fringes of Islam, you would think the spiritual leaders in Cairo's Al-Azhar and in Mecca and the Grand Mosque and in Medina would publicly speak out against their behavior as non-Islamic. But they never do, because there's a wealth of material in the Quran praising such behavior as plunging one's dagger into an unsuspecting person's neck. The Quran blesses decapitation. Muhammad personally was credited with 800 head choppings of Jews. This is not an Abrahamic religion, and this is why it must be stood up to and defeated, doing whatever it takes. But that cannot happen, cannot begin to happen, until the West and Israel honestly face the reality that, as in the 7th century, Islam is on the warpath. And when Muslims take up residence in a Western country, they're not planning to shed their Islamic culture. They come as a foreign body into the body politic, and they must be prevented from growing. You all heard Angela Merkel wishing yesterday she could turn back time. Her confession for the insanities, there's no other word for it, of throwing open Germany's doors to over 1 million more Muslims. One assumes from her biography, Merkel, daughter of a serious Christian who stood up to the communists heroically in East Germany, and from whom she likely inherited a most civilized guilt over what her people, the Germans, did to the Jews, so she could not bring herself to slam the door shut when she should have. They are portrayed as refugees. Among them are many jihadis. And even if the potential jihadist percentage is not so high, it is Islam itself that does not belong in the Judeo-Christian West, because the sex lives of Muslims are so screwed up.
לשם ממלכתך אין קדוש כשם כי אין בלתך
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Well, here's an interesting coincidence. On Sunday, 2 days ago, on the webcast, I said in response to the 5 Jew-killing attempts on Shabbos, and complained about the use of the term neutralized, and the fact that one of the attackers was wounded and taken to hospital, standard operating procedure here, I said that was unfortunate. None of these attackers should be neutralized, incapacitated, wounded just enough to render them harmless. No, they must be killed on the spot, I said on Sunday. And well, the next day, Monday, yesterday, in a courtroom in Jaffa where the trial of Sergeant Elul Azaya continues, a former IDF Deputy Chief of Staff, Uzi Dayan, Major General, testified on behalf of the defense and said exactly what I said the evening before. Terrorists must be killed on the spot. He even said, this combat veteran, quote, in certain cases, I ordered that terrorists be killed just because they are terrorists, with no relation to their condition, whether they were dangerous or not. Terrorists should be killed in every situation and under every condition, no. But to the question of whether terrorists should die, my answer is yes. He did not detail the exceptions he had in mind, but of course there are exceptions that do not destroy the general rule, but paradoxically, because they are exceptions, shine a light on the generality of the rule. You may remember that when this story broke, I think I said on the air that the original bad guy in this story is not Elul Azaya, who shot him in the head 11 minutes after he had been felled, but the guy who dropped him and did not finish him off. Dayan's testimony accused the prosecution of denying Elul his basic rights to presumed innocence. He challenged even the charge of manslaughter, reduced as it was from the original charge of murder. And what is interesting, for those who may not know, Uzi Dayan is the nephew of the famous late Moshe Dayan. Arguably, Uzi is the sanest in that family. When he was commander of the Central Command that includes Judea and Samaria, he was as supportive of the Jewish communities as he could be, given his role. And it was not too surprising to learn in a profile of him some years back that his wife had begun lighting candles on Erev Shabbos, and he makes Kiddush, and they began observing the Sabbath in some way. Uzi Dayan has always seemed to be, as I say, the sanest of the Dayans, whose craziness was all wrapped up, I think, in their hostile attitude to their Jewish identity, hostility to the Jewish religion and the Jews in history, whom they wanted to leave behind. Moshe Dayan was famous for returning possession of the Temple Mount to the Muslims, and his wife Ruth, first wife, always called herself an Israeli, not a Jew. And proudly remembered a few years living in London as a child, whose playmates were all Gentile girls. She never played with the Jewish girls. And then there was their son, the late actor, director, filmmaker Asi Dayan, who proudly declared they had never set foot in a synagogue and never would. And then there's rock singer Aviv Geffen. I think he's Uzi's cousin, the cousin's nephew, Yonatan Geffen. I think a journalist, writer, whose claim to fame, Aviv Geffen, was being a rock singer who wore women's makeup. This is something for the new Jew to be proud of. So it was gratifying to learn this morning of Uzi Dayan's testimony on behalf of Elul Azaya, who, I confess, I've never believed 100% in his innocence. I question his judgment in shooting as he did. Still, he deserves the benefit of the doubt and not to be punished. And if Uzi Dayan defends him, that's good enough for me. So it's gratifying to find myself in agreement with Uzi Dayan in the matter of killing these terrorists who clearly are responsible for their acts, who clearly are armed only with knives, who are dependent on the who are independent of help from superiors in his terror cell. If one suspects that a terrorist does belong to such a terror group, he has backup and support, then it makes sense not to kill him, but keep him alive for interrogation. And then after all the useful information has been gotten from him, then you kill him. Putting these people in prison is pointless and immoral. for using the taxpayers' money to feed him, to provide him medical care. Israel needs the death penalty for these irredeemable Muslim assassins. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday night, and I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday night. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.